England's finest. Swingin' Radio England, where the music is news.
The story of Radio England begins with the success of another station which started broadcasting on the high seas in those pioneering days of the early 60s.
If you want to sell in England, if you want to tell everybody what you've got, radio's the way to do it. Radio London is the very spot.
For further information about Radio London and what it can mean to you, contact Radlon Sales Limited, 17 Curzon Street, London. Do it today.
Call Mayfair 5361.
Don Pearson had been instrumental in setting up Radio London, but had serious disagreements with Philip Birch over the way the station was to be run. Philip Birch recalls the meetings.
He disagreed very much with the way I was running it and wanted it run in a different way. This was all in the early weeks of Radio London, as usual sort of boardroom politics that one runs into with new businesses. So we had a boardroom battle, unfortunately I won, and so he went. And he said, well, fine, he was going to set up a radio station to show me how it really should be done.
Don departed from the Radio London operation, taking with him Tom Danaher, who had helped to equip London ship the Galaxy. Tom had felt that their efforts were not sufficiently rewarded.
We were putting our money in pro rata with all the other guys. So, you know, when Don and I get together, we think, well, you know, we've taken the brunt of this thing. We've earned it, but nobody has suggested that we be given more interest in this thing. Why don't we start another ship? Because, see, we had the books on Radio London that it was a fantastic success. It was easy to go out and raise more money for another ship.
Tom had reservations about Don's plans.
We had this meeting, and Don kept saying, well, Tom, you know, I feel like we should go ahead and put an easy listening station and a top 40 station, two stations. And I said, well, Don, what do you mean? We're going to play 30 minutes of top 40 and 30 minutes of good listening music or what? No, I mean put two stations on it. And I said, how do you think we're going to do that with one transmitter? We're going to have two different frequencies. Yeah, but I'm talking about two transmitters, 250,000. I said, oh, come on, man. I said, with all the trouble we had with the one, getting it to load, of course, the whole ship, you couldn't even turn the lights off on the ship. I mean, there was so much energy there. I mean, when you pull a fluorescent tube out of the box, it was burning. So I said, Don, for the life of me, I do not think that could be done. I said, Don, if you want to check on the two-station deal, and then if you can tell me that it'll be done, whoever says that can make me believe it, I'll go along with it. But the only way I'm going to go is if we put one station on. If we could find a surplus aircraft carrier and put one mast on one end and one on the other end, with that much separation, we might be able to do it. But I even still doubt that due to the proximity of the closeness. Of course, they'd be about 800 feet apart. I'm no radio man. Anyway, I said, I advised against it.
Ron O'Quinn recalls the startup.
I had never heard of Don Pearson. He was president of the Eastland, Texas Bank and mayor of Eastland, Texas. Don was only one of the figures. Texas Senator John Towers was involved. Mrs. Lyndon Johnson, it was rumored, had some money in this thing. Don Pearson was one of the movers and the shakers. Bill Vix is one of my choices of the finest human beings that ever walked. He was an extremely nice man. Bill was not really aware of what he was getting into.
Johnny Walker.
Bill Vick was a very mild-mannered, quiet, Texas gentleman. Very well-mannered, called people sir, you know, had a very crew cut. He's sort of typical American on the one hand. And then Don Pearson was the sort of JR figure. Quite a colourful pair they were.
Soon, news reached the British press that a former U.S. Navy Liberty ship, the 480-ton, 186-foot motor vessel Olga Patricia, was being fitted out as an offshore radio station in Texas and Biscayne Harbor, Miami, Florida.
Pop radio pirate ships face new challenge. A radio ship is being fitted out at Miami, Florida, ready to invade Britain's pop pirates. 9 U.S. disc jockeys have been recruited, and an advance party is already in London. Probably, the 480-ton Olga Patricia will be broadcasting to Britain in 2 months. She will transmit 2 programs simultaneously, one devoted to pop, the other to soft music. The 176-foot vessel was brought to a Miami dockyard 3 months ago from the Panama Canal Zone and painted black. A 100-foot radio mast has been fitted and 2 50,000-watt transmitters installed. The men in the syndicate are represented in Miami by a Texan named Don Pearson. He refuses to discuss the project except to claim,
"There is also British money backing us."
The disc jockeys have been recruited by an American known only as Ron and describing himself as program director.
Ron O'Quinn.
I was a program director and disc jockey of WFUN in Miami. Had the doorbell ring one afternoon. On the weekends, we had minimal staff, and a guy by the name of Don Pearson was at the door saying, "I'd like to talk with you about going to England." But I met with him, and interesting proposition to go to England. We were going to put up the most powerful AM rock and roll radio station in the world at the time.
Jerry Smithwick.
The gentleman that was the managing partner of the operation that was putting the ship together to go over to England was having the ship outfitted in Miami. Contacted Ron, talked with him, and got Ron to agree to go over as program director. One of Ron's responsibilities in that job was to hire a disc jockey staff. So he called me in Gainesville and called Larry Dean. He called me one day. I left my job the next day and flew to Miami, and that was the first time I'd ever been on the ocean.
Larry Dean.
Ron called me. "What do you think of being a pirate?" I'd read a pirate radio, and it fascinated me. You know, I'd grown up on the idea of the old gambling ships off the coast and so on, and pirate radio just seemed a fascinating thing to do. So, sure, in a heartbeat, as soon as I can get a passport. And then apparently Jerry was hired, and Jerry and Rick went over with the ship. Ron had flown on to London to work on the basics, getting things set up. And I flew to London, I guess, about a month or so before the ship got there. We spent a lot of time talking to promotion people and record people, just trying to set up the idea, get the music, get the records, get the contacts within the industry.
Rick Randall wasn't happy in his current radio job.
I stuck an ad in a broadcasting magazine. Before it even published, Don Pearson had called broadcasting looking for some talent for this new operation in England. And I guess he came across my name and gave me a call while I was on the air in Montana and asked me if I was interested in going to England. Well, sure, that was fantastic. So that same day I got on the plane, went down to Miami, and never went back to Montana, and met Don in Miami, spent 3 weeks there helping to put together the studios and the transmitter facilities for the ship. And then we set sail for England. I recall we kind of left in a hurry, as I recall the story was. He said some reporter from the Miami Herald had caught wind and was nosing around the dock, and he didn't want to get tied up in any legal problems. So we just went set sail right away.